Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Wednesday, October 12th, 2016, episode 12.11, the Week 6 preview show. For the third consecutive week, people, I am the smartest man alive.
I am the smartest man alive!
That's right, as I defeat Richard Graves from Sky Sports, as the Cowboys pound the Cincinnati Bengals 28-14. That means my executive producer, the man who has put up his body for the fans and is going to take the punishment after I win the challenge games this season, Jeremy Parker, has decided that it's time for him to put his picks back up against mine this week to see if he can stop the bleeding as I take a 3-2 lead in the challenge game. This was a great weekend in football. And then, people, there was one. That's right, the Minnesota Vikings are the lone undefeated team after 5 weeks of play, and they're guaranteed to be undefeated after week six. Why? They're on a bye. And what a comeback by Tom Brady, huh? We'll talk about that. And I have one question to ask. Will the Chargers manage to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory again this week? Because they keep finding ways to do it. Lots to talk about, people. Let's chomp it in. Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves. Oh my goodness, people. We are in full swing. Week six is here. It's getting ready to kick off in less than 24 hours as the Denver Broncos travel to San Diego to face the San Diego Chargers. We'll get to all the week six picks, including my lock of the week. That's 2 weeks in a row that the lock hits. Feeling pretty good about that. The San Francisco 49ers have decided to start the questionable, I guess. Their quarterback from the past, Colin Kaepernick. And funny enough, he's restructured his contract with the San Francisco 49ers, and all of a sudden, he finds himself on the football field. Basically, by restructuring his contract, the contract now eliminates any injury guarantees. I'm sure that's what the 49ers were afraid of. Like, hey, man, if we put him out on the field, he gets hurt. He's got some guaranteed clauses. We got to pay him some money. And Chip Kelly goes in and says, hey, we got to play Colin Kaepernick. Do what you got to do. They restructure his deal. No longer has any injury guarantees. And now the San Francisco 49ers are putting him up onto the field. We'll talk a little bit more about that because, of course, my executive producer, Jeremy Parker, not only is he going to put his picks up against me this week, he would like to talk to me a little bit about that Colin Kaepernick situation. So I will do that a little bit later in the exec producer segment. Now, a little bit of news before we get into last week's games, week five, very, very good week. Let's talk about Tom Brady. Not only is he back on the football field, he destroyed the Cleveland Browns, 406 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, no picks. He rushed for a first down, and he's like, first down, he put the signal out there. He was excited to be back on the field. It was good to see Tom Brady back on the field, and I have the new question about Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. Rob Gronkowski was back. He had over 100 yards receiving. But Martellus Bennett, the other tight end, he caught all three of Tom Brady's touchdown passes. And you have to ask, if you have yet to ask yourself now, you should be asking yourself, is Martellus Bennett the new Aaron Hernandez? Remember that guy who was a very great tight end? Right next to Rob Gronkowski, he caught a lot of touchdown passes from Tom Brady before becoming a criminal and deciding to kill somebody and going off to jail and no longer on the football team. Now, for the last couple of years, the New England Patriots have tried to bring in other tight ends to kind of fit that bill. They haven't found someone. But now that Brady is back, Martellus Bennett was doing pretty well with Garoppolo and Brissett. Now he's got Tom Brady, and Tom Brady, all of a sudden, throws three touchdown passes to this guy, and you have to start wondering, is he going to now become that Aaron Hernandez-type tight end, the guy who catches all the passes? Look, you can't cover everybody on that team. If you're going to, you know, roll your best cover guy, not a corner, but if you would, your best cover safety, or if you do bring in the third corner and you put him on Gronkowski, who's going to cover Martellus Bennett? That guy has been a guy who has had a lot of potential, started with the Cowboys, went over to the Giants, kind of mulled around. There was a lot of talent. There was a lot of potential, but these other teams just couldn't get it out of him. Here he is with the Patriots, and he's balling, and he's playing lights out. Continue to watch that guy. Martellus Bennett, tight end for the Patriots. If Gronkowski stays healthy and he is on the field and defenses are going to try and take Gronk away from the Patriots and Tom Brady, Martellus Bennett is going to make them pay. You watch out for that. Anyways, the final there in that game was 33-13. I mean, at one point that game was 7-7. Of course, it was early in the first quarter. But after that, Tom Brady just took over, and the Cleveland Browns were no match. They fall to 0-5. They remain the only winless team in the National Football League. New England 33-13 there. That was pretty good. And El Juego Grande Estupendo de la Semana, there was what I believe was a huge upset. Atlanta goes into Denver and punches the Denver Broncos in the mouth. I'm serious. It was a straight up boom. 23-16 was the final. It was pretty close. The Broncos did score 13 points in the fourth quarter to make it a much closer game than it actually was. I mean, Atlanta dominated the entire game. They were up 23-3, I think, or 23-10 for a while. I think the Broncos scored a touchdown there late. There was just really seconds left or minutes left in the game. And then they tried an onside kick and didn't recover it. 23-16, Atlanta is showing at 4-1 that they're a team to be reckoned with. Offense is clicking. Julio Jones is playing some good football. And their defense is doing pretty good. Look, it was Paxton Lynch out there. Clearly, Paxton Lynch showed he's not ready for prime time. He's not ready to be the full-time starter. Maybe he could come in and take a couple series or two as he did earlier, but I'm not sure he's ready to be a full-time starter in the league. Certainly didn't look like it against the Atlanta Falcons. Both those teams at 4-1, 23-16, the final in that one. The Philadelphia Eagles travel to Detroit. They take their first loss of the season. The Detroit Lions jumped out to a huge lead. They were pumped for this game. I think they really wanted to show their old coach, Jim Schwartz, that maybe it was on him. And I'm sure he came in, for, you know, being the defensive coordinator for Philly, saying, look, I'm going to stop you guys. They took a 21-0 lead. Philadelphia chipped away at the lead, I'm sorry, it was a 20-0 lead. They chipped away at the lead, got back into it, took a 21-20 lead. And I'm sorry, 23-21 lead over Detroit late in the game. But then there was a big fumble by Ryan Matthews. He fumbled the ball away to Detroit. Detroit took it down, got close enough to punch a field goal in late in the fourth. And it was 24-23. Philadelphia got the ball with a little bit of time left. They had a couple minutes on the clock. They could have gone and gotten, tried to get back in the field goal range to win the game late. But Carson Wentz, the rookie, threw his first interception at that point. It was a pass that I think he forced down the field. He didn't really need to take that shot at that time because they had plenty of time, had a couple timeouts. It kind of got away from him, and it was picked off, his first on the season. And Philadelphia gets their first loss. They drop to 3-1, while the Lions improved to 2-3 with that victory. Next up, the Houston Texans traveled to Minnesota, and man, the Minnesota Vikings look good, especially on the defensive side of the ball. They harassed Paxton Lynch the entire game. 31-13 was the final there. Minnesota 5-0, as I said earlier, the lone undefeated team in the National Football League. They're playing great football. And since they're on a bye in week 6, guaranteed to be undefeated going into week 7. And I cannot wait to see when they come back off their bye week. They're getting better. Defensively, they're solid. So you have to go, when you play Minnesota, You have to play mistake-free football, and you have to get some pressure on Sam Bradford. Look, if you're not going to pressure Sam Bradford and you're just going to let him sit back there, he will pick you apart. That is a given. I can guarantee you that if you don't move him around and you don't rattle him, Bradford is going to kill you. It's not even going to be close. He is going to be perfect. He will pick you apart, and you have got to get him off his mark and move him around. He was nearly perfect in this game. 22 of 30 for 271 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks, and he hardly got touched. On the other side, Brock Osweiler was 19 of 42. That's right. You heard me correctly. He only completed 19 passes, although he threw 42 attempts. Had a pick. He did have a touchdown pass, but that was pretty late. It was really irrelevant in that football game. Minnesota is playing great defense. And with the combination of Asiata and McKinnon, and now they're starting to get Cordell Patterson involved, running the football, catching the football. The thing is that Bradford is throwing it to everyone. It doesn't matter who it is. He's throwing it to Patterson. He's throwing it to Rudolph. They didn't even have Stephon Diggs in that football game. But I think it was something like 8 different players caught a pass in that football game from Sam Bradford. And literally, he had all day to throw the football. If that is the MO, defensively, you're going against the Minnesota defense, your team is going to struggle to put up points. You can put up some. You're not going to put up a lot. So what you're going to have to do to go in and beat Minnesota, whether they come to you or you go to them, you're going to have to get to Sam Bradford. You have to rattle Bradford, because if you just let him sit back there with no pressure, he will eat you up, and he's showing that in the first 4 weeks here that he's been the starter there for the Minnesota Vikings. Once again, the final there, 31-13. Minnesota made it look easy. Texans, you know, I said all along, I did not like the Brock Osweiler move. Brock Osweiler, to me, never looked like a starter in the National Football League. He didn't look like a starter with Denver, and he doesn't look like a starter now. He's just young. I mean, I'll give him that. I mean, he's I think, 25. He's 25 years old. So he's still very young. There's still a lot for him to learn. And he's just not making great decisions. First of all, he's not making great decisions. But what I see from Osweiler is that he's not making the decisions fast enough. He doesn't get there fast enough. He holds on to the football too long, and by that time, the defense has blown the play apart, and it's not looking very good. Right now, it does not look like a good decision by the Houston Texans to pay him all that money. All right, that was a 31-13 final. Houston picks up their second loss. They're now at 3-2. And as I said, the Vikings are a perfect 5-0. All right, I'm going to move through the rest of the games a little bit quicker here so that we can get to week 6. But I will talk to Pittsburgh Steelers over the New York Jets. That was just the Jets. I don't even have a word for what the Jets are right now. I think the Jets certainly need to regroup. 31-13 beatdown at the hand of Pittsburgh. Look, it's hard to go into Pittsburgh right now and win football games, but you get shut out in the second half. I mean, this was a close game. It was 14-13 at the half. It was a close game. And they came out flat. They started to turn over the ball again and just, you know, let the Pittsburgh Steelers run away with it. Pittsburgh improves to 4-1. The Jets are 1-4. And what did I say last week, people? If you're 1-4, your chances of making the playoffs, I think last week I said it was something like 7.9%. I've done some research now. It's actually 6%. It's even lower than what I said last week. If you start the season 1-4, you have a 6% chance of making the playoffs. When you get to 1-4, you get to 5 games played. That is enough of a sample size to know who your team is. And if you're 1-4, people, you're a bad team. You are not going to win a lot of football games. and you can forget about making the playoffs. It's not going to happen. And that includes teams like the Carolina Panthers. They're 1-4. Their debacle losing on Monday night to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that was not pretty at all. You know, the San Diego Chargers, who every week they seem to find a way to lose a football game, a game they have every right to win, they find a way to lose it. That's why I say, how are they going to find this week a way to snatch victory or snatch defeat from the jaws of victory? Because they had the victory. They have it. It's right there. It's for them, for the taking. And then they just snatch it to a defeat right from the jaws of the victory. It's not good. The Minnesota, the Miami Dolphins, 1-4, sitting there, not looking good. Obviously, the Cleveland Browns, 0-5. That's pretty bad. The San Francisco 49ers, they dropped to 1-4. They lost to the Arizona Cardinals 33-21 on Thursday Night Football. One of the games that probably they're looking at that game, and Chip Kelly is saying, I cannot continue to go with Gabber. I just can't do it. That is not going to allow this football team to win a lot of football games. Look, the Niners are 1-4. They're kind of be a little happy the Rams lost. So the Rams dropped in losing to the Buffalo Bills this week, 30-19 in L.A., where basically their offense just was stymied every time it got inside the red zone. They just had to settle for far too many key field goals. Look, 30-19 was the final. They settled for 4 field goals, and those were all chippy field goals, really, really short field goals. That means that they left 16 points on the field. When you have to settle, when you get in that close, and instead of scoring, punch it in, finding a way to punch it in and getting touchdowns, you settle for chippy 25, 30-yard, 35-yard field goals. Those are kimmies. In the National Football League, kickers are so good that anything under 39 yards is a gimme. You need to make that. I mean, that's just a gimme. Just take it. Those are 3 points, and they settled for that 4 times. That means if you multiply 4 times 4, that's 16 points they left on the field because they were close enough to punch it into the end zone. That's what the Rams did. You're not going to win football games like that. Remember, I went on the Epic Rant week 1. That's how the Cowboys got their only loss to the Giants. Because in that Giants football game, they got close, settled for field goals. And in the end, they needed one more field goal to win the game. They lost by a point. Had they punched in any one of those field goals that they settled for, they would have beat the Giants week 1. Now they're not settling for field goals. They're actually scoring touchdowns when they get inside the red zone. I think the fumble that Dak Prescott had late in the third quarter, his first turnover of the season, which was incredible, and really couldn't do anything about that strip fumble. He didn't see the dude coming, and he just swiped at the ball. That was a great play by the Bengal defender. Besides that, every time they've been in the red zone, that was the first time that the Cowboys didn't come away with points. Now, a couple of those were field goals, but over the last 10, 7 of them have been touchdowns. 7 touchdowns, 2 field goals, and then the strip fumble. That's pretty good for the Dallas Cowboys. That's what I'm talking about, finishing the drives, and the Rams right now are not finishing drives. The Rams are stalling, and they're finding unique ways to stall on their own. Usually it's a dumb penalty by an offensive lineman or a dumb holding call, and they do something that gets them out of their rhythm, that got them into the red zone in the first place, and then they have to settle for a chippy field goal. 16 points, man. 16 points. That would have given them the victory over the Buffalo Bills because they only lost by 11. 16 points would have been good. Even if they just got 3 touchdowns and it's not even 4. Add those 9 points. Well, no, okay. I mean, 12 points, yeah. They would have won by a point had they just got 3. I don't know why I'm doing so much math today. But the Rams, because they frustrate me, because I was watching with Jeff. Look, Jeff's, if you don't know, everybody, of course, knows Jeff. We love Jeff. And he's doing well. And he was actually over at the house. We were watching We had the Cowboy-Bengal game on one TV, and we had the Rams-Bills game on another TV. He is all in with the Rams. He is bought back in with the Rams. He loves the Rams. The Rams are his team. But he knows they're struggling right now. And every time they had to settle for a field goal, woo, we would go on epic rants. And maybe next time we watch a game together, I'll have to record those sessions so that you guys can hear us going. Because we went at it on the Rams there. 30-19, they lost. The Cowboys, as I said, 28-0 going into the fourth quarter. They gave up a couple garbage time touchdowns to the Cincinnati Bengals to make this final 28-14. But here was what everybody was saying about the Cowboys. Oh, Dak Prescott, he hasn't faced the defense. And you know, who they beat? Who they beat? The Redskins. And, oh, they beat the San Francisco 49ers. And they beat the Chicago Bears. Oh, there's nothing. That's nothing. It's nobody. Wait till they play a team like the Cincinnati Bengals who are getting Dunlap back and they're perfect back. And they're just going to come out and they're going to terrorize the Cowboys. 28-0 before anybody blinked, y'all. That was some good, solid football. And that game, by the way, was a challenge game. I had the Dallas Cowboys. Richard Graves, of all people, had the Cincinnati Bengals. He had the pick for the challenge game. He sent me an email. He's like, oh, man, I'm taking the Bengals. It's in the bag. That doesn't really sound like Richard at all, does it? Let me see. Should I do it, Richard? Let me do it, Richard Graves. He's like, Steven, it is definitely going to be the Bengals all the way. Definitely all the way. And that's probably not Richard either. But anyways, he's going to listen to this. He's going to kick my butt next time he sees me. But he had the Bengals. I had the Cowboys. And Richard, I know you keep living in the past and talking about how many times you picked me last year and blah, blah, blah. That's in the past, buddy. Right now, this season, you are 0-1, making me...
I am the smartest man alive!
Squawk! Yeah. Oh, I took Richard. And now that's three straight wins for me in the challenge game. I'm up 3-2. And that's why Jeremy Park is like, hey, man, I got to put my picks against you. I got to stop the bleeding. As a matter of fact, I got to read. I'm pulling it up right now. The email from Jeremy, because it made me chuckle when I said when I talked about him putting his picks up against me. What did he say? I'm bringing it here. He says, I can't believe after we got ahead in the challenge game, you've crept into the lead again. Just can't trust that Richard Graves with anything. I love it. You can't trust that Richard Graves with anything. There you go. That was a lot of fun. Richard, thank you for taking time from your busy schedule. I know Richard's doing football and he's doing all kinds of stuff for Sky Sports now. Appreciate you taking the time and putting your picks up against me. But I'll just take this one last time to say,
I am the smartest man alive!
All right. The Baltimore Ravens had a win. Talk about snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. The Ravens lost 16-10, but defensive play. Defender made a great play, intercepted the ball. He's rushing to try and score a touchdown. He reaches, and as he reaches, he kind of lost control of the ball, and it looked like he just pushed the ball out of the back of the end zone, and the Redskins got the ball back at the 20-yard line. Now, I'm going to take a quick pause here to rant on that play because it is driving me crazy, and I think it's time the NFL needs to do something about it, and that's ranting on fumbles going out of your end zone and you give the ball to the opposing team. This is what I'm talking about. It happened in the Baltimore Ravens game against the Redskins. It's happened all throughout the last couple of years. And this is something that the NFL needs to take a look at. If you're on offense, and you're running with the football. You've caught it. You got handoff, and you're running with the football, and you run, and you fumble the ball out of bounds. Guess what? The opponent did not recover the ball. You retained possession of the football at the spot the ball went out of bounds. It's still your ball. Other team didn't get it. They didn't make a play on it. That seems logical. It seems fair. You fumbled. It went out of bounds. If it goes out of bounds backwards, you lose all that yardage. You get it at the spot where it goes out of bounds. You lose that yardage. If it goes forward, you gain maybe a little yardage. But that there's a rule that, you know, under 2 minutes, you can't the whole holy roller Oakland Raider play. You can't keep pushing it forward. If it's fourth down, only the player who fumbled it can recover it. And advance it. There's all kinds of rules to prevent cheating, fumbling the football forward. I get that. But if it goes out of bounds, anywhere in the field, if it goes out of bounds in your own end zone, let's say you are in going to the end zone that you have to score. That's what I'm trying to say. You're trying to go forward, and you're trying to get to the end zone to score a touchdown. And the runner is going, he's about 2 yards from scoring a touchdown, and inexplicably, the ball squirts out from his hand. If it goes out at the 1 yard line, he gets the ball back. The team gets the ball back at the 1 yard line. If it goes a yard further and goes out of the end zone, out of bounds line, the opposing team gets the ball, even though they didn't recover it. And not only do they get the ball, they get the ball out at their own 20-yard line, 20 yards away from the goal line. That is the most incredibly crazy, ludicrous, not fair play in the National Football League. And the league has to look at that now. It bogs me, my mind, that a team would get rewarded a football and yardage for doing nothing. In this particular instance, the Redskins threw an interception. So they threw a negative play. They made a turnover. The Ravens defender made a great play on the ball. He runs. Maybe he got a little overzealous. And he got to the 1 yard line. The ball squirts out and it goes out of the back of the end zone. The Redskins didn't recover it. They created a turnover. It was a negative play for them. Everything about that play was negative, and they did not recover the football. Yet because it went out, instead of the Ravens having the ball at the 1 yard line, being rewarded for their positive play, the Redskins get the ball at the 20-yard line. They actually gain yardage for throwing an interception. Oh, and by the way, they get a fresh set of downs. It's first down. Doesn't that sound ridiculous? Isn't that just a play that the NFL needs to address this offseason? This is a league that changes rules all the time. I can't even tell you how many changed rules there were at the beginning of this season. They can't look at that one and get it right, because there is absolutely no way the Baltimore Ravens should have been punished that way for a spectacular interception play. And instead, you reward the team that threw the turnover, the ball, more yardage than when they originally had, and a fresh set of downs. That's what the Redskins got for doing nothing positive in that play. Yeah, that strikes me as bad football. Just bad football. The league has to do something about that play. Anyways, the Redskins won the game 16-10. They held on. Flacco and the Ravens were driving there near the end of the game. They just couldn't complete a pass there on fourth and eight to get a first down and keep the change moving. There was a pretty good defensive play by the Redskins on that final play to knock the ball loose from the wide receiver, and they held on to win 16-10. They've won three in a row after losing their first two of the season. The Baltimore Ravens have dropped two in a row after winning their first three of the season. Both teams are 3-2 and moving on. The Chicago Bears gave the Indianapolis Colts a scare in Indy, but the Colts were able to hang on for the win. They improved to 2-3, dropping the Bears to 1-4. We talk about 6%. Every time I say 1-4, I want you all to yell out 6%. That's all the chance they have of making the playoffs. Then, finally, the Green Bay Packers, Sunday Night Football, 23-16, victorious over the Giants. They pretty much kept the Giants in check. The Giants scored a touchdown in the fourth quarter with like 2 minutes left in the game. It was like a 138, actually. Odell Beckham Jr. caught his first touchdown of the season, and it was actually a questionable catch. I just can't believe NBC, and trust me, I'm going to be talking to my NBC sports guys. There is not a camera angle from both sides of the end line in the end zone. You're trying to tell me that this is a nationally televised game, Sunday night football on NBC, and there are not camera angles from both sides so we could see whether Odell Beckham Jr. was on the line at the back of the end zone or not. So they review it. They say, hey, we can't really see the other side, so we don't really know. And since it was called a touchdown, we're just going to give Odell Beckham Jr. a touchdown. I'm a little bitter at that play because I was winning my fantasy football game until that play happened, and the dude beat me by 2 points because Odell got his touchdown. That was a bunch of bunk. But still, NBC, come on. We're making a lot of money. You can put another camera on the other side of the field so we could have reverse angle there on the sideline. That would be very, very appreciative. But 23-16 was the final. Packers hold on to win. Aaron Rodgers just did enough. I think the Packers are just doing enough to win football games right now. But they're 3-1. Here come the 4-1 Dallas Cowboys. I cannot wait for next week's game between the Cowboys and the Packers at Lambeau. Going to be a good one, y'all. Then the San Diego Chargers dropping to 1-4, losing to the Oakland Raiders, who are a very nice 4-1, 34-31. Basically, the Chargers, Phillip Rivers, marched them all the way down the field, got them in the field goal range. Here we go. We're going to kick a field goal to tie it, possibly force overtime, and they can't handle the snap. The holder drops the ball. He gets tackled. They don't even try to kick the field goal, and they wind up losing 34-31. It's ridiculous. Every week the Chargers, either they're winning by 13 points and they fumble a couple times and let the other team win, or in this case, they go in to tie it. They're going to maybe try and pull the upset on the road, and they can't even kick a simple field goal. Ay, ay, ay. All right. That was last week, and now it's time to turn our attentions to week 6 of the National Football League. As I've said before, the Minnesota Vikings are on a bye, as well as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They go into a bye after that 17-14 victory over the Carolina Panthers in a game where all I really have to say is kickers. Oh, my God. That the Tampa Bay Buccaneers moved up back into the second round to draft Robert Aguayo, a kicker. They moved back into the second round to get him. And this guy's already missed 4 field goals in 5 games. That's not good. That is not good. Not for a kicker that was drafted in the second round. But, you know, the Carolina Panthers aren't any better. Gano missed a field goal earlier in the game. But, yes, Robert Aguayo was able to redeem himself. He kicked a field goal at the end of the game, right at the end of regulation, because I have no idea what Ron Rivera was doing with his managing of the clock, calling timeouts for the opposing team, letting them compose themselves, make a couple first downs, and getting field goal range. But the Panthers are 1-4. I hope you all said 6%, because that's right, 6% of teams make the playoffs after starting 1-4, and that's the Carolina Panthers right now, my friends. All right, moving on, let's get to week 6 picks, and we'll start with El Juego Grande Estupendo de la Semana. We'll start with a 4-1 Dallas Cowboys heading to the 3-1 Green Bay Packers. And right off the bat, Jeremy and I differ on a game. What a surprise, surprise, surprise. Little Gomer Pyle there. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Jeremy says Green Bay, he's like, this is a difficult game to call, he says, but I think Green Bay at home will be too strong. I disagree. The way the Dallas Cowboys are playing football right now on the offensive side of the ball, I'm going to go with Ezekiel Elliott and that offensive line and that offense running the ball the way they're running right now. I know the Green Bay Packers have the number one run defense.
But it's not like they've been playing some stellar running backs, y'all. I got Ezekiel. He is running like a beast. At the beginning of the season, and Steve Patterson, I know you're listening, dog. There's a correspondent for NBC. His name's Steve Patterson. And I told him, Ezekiel Elliott is going to run for 1,350-plus yards. 1,350-plus. And he'll have 13-plus TDs. And he laughed. I said, put your money where your mouth is. What do you want to bet? You want to take that bet? He says, I'll take that bet. So I've got Zeke scoring 13-plus TDs and rushing for 1,350-plus yards. As of week five, he has 546 yards rushing and five TDs. So he's basically scoring a touchdown per game. He's played in five games, has five TDs. One touchdown per game, that's going to get me over the 13. That would be 16 touchdowns if he continues that pace. And rushing-wise, he's on pace to rush for 1,747 yards. Yeah, we're not crazy. He may not keep up that pace, or he may start exceeding it because he has been just getting better and better. His yards per average has been getting better game after game after game after game. I'm going to take Zeke. Dak Prescott, it's just the game is not too fast for him. Games are not too big for him. He does everything the coaches ask him to do. I think he had his first turnover out of the game. It didn't affect the outcome of the game. And even after the fumble, he was calm, cool, and collected, doing everything right. So don't even get me started on the whole Tony Romo, when he comes back, is he going to play? Let's not even go there, okay? Let's just focus on what we got at hand right now. Yes, by the way, I believe that Tony Romo should become the starter once he is healthy and been given the green light. I've always been on the side of you don't bench a hurt player. You know, you can go all the way back to the year that Harbaugh did it and he benched Alex Smith in favor of Colin Kaepernick. Just for the record, Alex Smith was starting for the Kansas City Chiefs, doing quite well. And Colin Kaepernick has been struggling, and he just finally is going to get to be able to start again for the San Francisco 49ers. So you don't do that. I love what Dak is doing. I'm on the Dak Prescott. I'm on the Dak Prescott train bandwagon, whatever you want to call it. I love what the kid is doing. But when Romo is healthy, he comes back onto the football field, and he will lead us home. Now, I like the Dallas Cowboys. I think they'll be able to run against Green Bay. I think they'll be able to control the time of possession. I think they're going to be able to get to Aaron Rodgers now that the Cowboys have their rushers back on the football field. Their defense is starting to kind of step up a little bit. The pressure got to Andy Dalton last week. Mo Claiborne is playing out of his freaking mind defensively. I think he'll be able to shut down Jordy Nelson. I think that Carr will be able to shut down Randall Cobb, and Aaron Rodgers is going to have to do something else to win this football game. Eddie Lacy's now nursing an ankle injury. He couldn't finish the game against the Giants. We don't know whether he's even going to be on the field or not. For a big game like this, we'll just see once again. Is it too bright? Is it too big for the rookies? I don't think it will be. I think they'll play lights out, and I think they'll get to Aaron Rodgers a little bit. I'll take Dallas. So there you go, Jeremy. There's one game that you could possibly make a challenge game. Let's move on to the games of the week. Oh, yeah, another NFC East matchup. The Philadelphia Eagles traveling to our nation's capital to face the Washington Redskins. All right. Philadelphia and Washington. I hate both of these teams. Can they both get a loss? I'm checking with my judges over here to see if – Nope. My judges, by the way, are my little puppies. They're both looking at me, shaking their heads like, no, I don't think they can both – all right, they can't get a loss. They can't both get a loss. I wish they could. But I'm going to take the home team in this one. I think the Philadelphia Eagles last week were exposed by the Detroit Lions. They're still, you know, pretty young over there on that side of the ball. Young head coach and Peterson. There's still plenty that Philadelphia has to put up. Yes, they did scratch and fight and claw their way back into that game in Detroit, but they didn't get the victory. Now they're going on the road against a division foe, the Washington Redskins, three in a row. They don't play pretty football, but they find ways to win the game when need be. I'm going to stick with Washington. Let's see what Jeremy says. He says, I'm taking the Eagles. The Eagles are too strong for the Redskins this year. I haven't bought in. I didn't buy into the Philadelphia Eagles 3-0 victory start of the season. I haven't bought in yet. They're going to have to show me a little bit more. So there you go. Right off the bat, two games we differ on. I've got the Redskins at home. He's got the Philadelphia Eagles. Moving on to Miami, where the Miami Dolphins host the Pittsburgh Steelers. Look, the Miami Dolphins are toast. They are awful. If it weren't for the fact that they beat the Cleveland Browns the week before, and they barely won that game. Remember, they needed the Cleveland kicker to miss like a 40-yarder for them to go to overtime, and then they won in overtime. That's the Miami Dolphins for you. They're that bad that they almost lost to the Cleveland Browns. The Browns, if it weren't for the Browns, Miami would be 32 on my ranking list. If I did a power ranking, the Miami Dolphins might, even though they've won a game over the Browns, they still might be the worst team in the National Football League. Miami's bad, y'all. And I don't care how much money they're paying in Ndamukong Suh, and I don't care how much money they're spending on the defensive side of the ball. Defense, I still don't believe, is what wins you championships. It may, but you have to put some points on the board. And last week against the Tennessee Titans, Miami got rolled. Rolled. Couldn't stop the run. Couldn't stop anybody. I cannot wait to see what the Pittsburgh Steelers do to them. I've got Pittsburgh. Jeremy says, it worries me that I'm taking a lot of teams on the road, but Pittsburgh are too strong for the Finns. I am with him on that one. There is no way Miami wins this game. If you are picking a survivor pool, this is the game. Even though it meets none of my criteria, the Steelers are on the road. It's a game that everyone's going to be looking at. Take the Pittsburgh Steelers. It doesn't matter. There is no way Miami will be able to keep up with the speed and the talent and the offense of the Pittsburgh Steelers. We both have Pittsburgh. Finally agree on something. Moving on to New England, where the New England Patriots, fresh off their 33-13 whooping of the Cleveland Browns, now get the Cincinnati Bengals, who are coming off a whooping of their own. Let's see what Jeremy has to say. He says, Brady at home, no contest. I kind of will just follow suit there. I'm going to take the New England Patriots. I think in years past, I would probably take the Cincinnati Bengals and say they're coming off a, you know, bad loss and they got embarrassed and they're going to go into New England and take it to Brady. Yeah, I don't think so. They're not going to get blown out again. I'll tell you that much. Right now, I think the line is 9.5 points that the Patriots are favored by. Yeah, they could be 9.5 point favorites against the Cleveland Browns. They probably shouldn't be 9.5 point favorites against Cincinnati. I'll probably take Cincinnati in the points in that one. But I think New England certainly wins the football game. The Bengals will keep it close, but they won't have enough firepower to win. I think New England wins by a touchdown. We both have the Patriots and agree on that one. The Kansas City Chiefs travel to Oakland to face the Oakland Raiders. The Raiders are looking good, my people. I told you the Raiders would probably win 8-9 games. It's now looking like 10-11 games for Oakland, and they will be pushing the Denver Broncos at the end of the season for the winner of that division. The AFC West is up for grabs. Oakland kind of smells blood in the water, and they're going to keep going at it. Offense is a lot of fun to watch. If you haven't seen a Raider game this year, get to a television set this weekend and watch this one against Kansas City. They're at home. I've got Oakland to win this one. Let's see. Chiefs at Raiders. Jeremy Parker says, Raiders. I'm all in with the Raiders this year. Plus, they're at home. That's right. The Raiders are starting to feel pretty comfortable in their skins there in Oakland. And they will improve to 5-1. And the Kansas City Chiefs, yes, they're coming off a bye, but I don't think that's going to matter at all. I'll take Oakland
to get the win.
Seattle. The Seattle Seahawks hosting the Atlanta Falcons, and this is probably the weirdest line of the week. The Seattle Seahawks started kind of slow. They kind of got back up to speed. They won a few games before going to their bye. Then all of a sudden, in a game where the Atlanta Falcons have knocked off the defending Super Bowl champions, knocked off Colin Kaepernick. Colin Kaepernick. Everybody's beating Colin Kaepernick. He hasn't even played yet. Knocked off Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers. Beat the Arizona Cardinals. The Atlanta Falcons are looking really good offensively and defensively. They now go to Seattle. And, yeah, granted, they're on the road, and it's their second road game. But they are underdogs by a touchdown. Seattle is favored by 7. And I don't buy it. I don't think Seattle is that good. I know Atlanta, out of the dome, struggles. They looked pretty darn good in Denver last weekend. Can they do it again 2 weeks in a row? I don't know if they go into Seattle and get the victory, but it's going to be a lot closer than 7 points. I would take the points, get Atlanta and get the points. I think you'll be okay. But I'm going to stick with Seattle winning the game. Jeremy says it'll be a close game, but Seahawks are beginning to roll, and not many teams win in that stadium. It is loud, y'all. So we both have Seattle. We both agree on that one, but we both agree it's going to be a close game. I would definitely grab Atlanta and the 7 points if I could. The Houston Texans hosting a division rival, the Indianapolis Colts. Now, this is the final game of the week. Indy has to show that they're ready to start winning within their division. The one thing the Indianapolis Colts have done over the recent history is they've beaten up on teams in their division. The AFC South has been Indianapolis's for a while. Up until last year when Andrew Luck went down to injury, the Colts have dominated Houston, Jacksonville, and Tennessee. Well, they already lost to Jacksonville earlier this year in London. Here they come. And now they play Houston after escaping with a win at home against the Chicago Bears. Houston isn't a juggernaut team themselves, but they're at home. They do play good defense. Indianapolis has no run what to speak of. I think they're 54 games in a row without having a 100-yard rusher. They're not going to be able to run for 100 yards against Houston. Andrew Luck's going to have to throw the ball. And I'd say that he's doing pretty good job, but he is getting hit far too often, taking too many hits. Houston's going to come after him. I like the Houston Texans in this one. Let's see. Jeremy says the Colts were disappointing in London, and I think Texas at home is going to be too strong for them. I agree. I do not like what I see of Indianapolis right now so far, so we agree again with the Houston Texans. Wow, we differed on the first two games, then we've agreed on everything so far, but we're going to start disagreeing again. Let's move on to games of interest. All right, in games of interest, we start out with Denver traveling to San Diego Thursday night football. San Diego Chargers at home. He's like, the Broncos are going to bounce back after a loss. That's what Jeremy says, and I agree with him. Plus, Trevor Siemian is back at quarterback for the Denver Broncos. He should be available for this game. They'll take on the San Diego Chargers. They'll win. San Diego probably plays them close. They're probably fuming from letting another one slip away. But they keep finding ways to lose games they should win. I'm not going to trust San Diego until I see them actually win a game. So I'm with Denver on this one, and so is Jeremy. The Los Angeles Rams traveled to Detroit to face the Lions. Although the Lions are not that bad. They're not rowing right now. The Detroit Lions are favored in this game by a field goal. So there's your home field advantage. I actually like Detroit. I think when Detroit is at home on their turf, they move really well. Matt Stafford throws the ball very well. Marvin Jones has been a great find for him since the departure of Calvin Johnson. They actually went and signed Justin Forsett this week to bolster their running regime after Amir Abdullah went down with an injury. So I like what the Lions are doing. I think defensively they'll be able to stifle the Rams. Everybody's stifling the Rams. The Rams have yet to get Todd Gurley on track. I don't know what they're going to do to get him on track. The reason they can't get him on track is because nobody fears Case Keenum. There you go. I said it. Nobody wants to say it. I'm going to say it. Nobody fears Case Keenum. And if defenses don't fear you throwing the football, they're going to stop your run all day. And I feel bad for Todd Gurley, but he's not going to get going until the Rams shake something up on the offensive side of the ball and start showing they could throw the ball down the field. All he's doing is dinks and dunks, short, quick outs to Tavon Austin and letting him use his speed. That's all the Rams are about, and the Detroit Lions will be ready for all of that, kind of like the Buffalo Bills were. The defense moves really fast side to side, and the Rams will have trouble scoring touchdowns, which are going to need to be Detroit. I've got Detroit. Let's see what Jeremy says. He says the Rams have been improving since their first game of the season, and the Lions have nothing, so I'll take the Rams. So Jeremy's got the Rams. I've got the Lions. There is game three that we differ upon. Moving to the next game of interest, the Buffalo Bills at home, finally, after being on the road for a while, host the San Francisco 49ers, who have a new quarterback. Jeremy's taking the 49ers. He's back on his team. He's saying, the return of number seven, the kickstart to our season. Actually, he says, the kickstart our season needs. He likes number seven. That's Colin Kaepernick, who will get the start at Buffalo. I think he will have some success against the Bills, but I think ultimately the Bills at home will be too tough. They're in the midst of a three-game win streak. I like Buffalo to win that game. So there you go, Jeremy. If you really, really, really want to make an interesting challenge game, you should take your 49ers against the Bills. Wow, I cannot believe I am trying to goad him into taking that game. San Francisco, Buffalo, he's got the Niners, I've got the Bills. Moving on, the New Orleans Saints host the Carolina Panthers. And look, it's time. It's time to get it right. Cam Newton, Cam's supposed to be back for this football game, and he has got to right the ship for the Panthers. Otherwise, it is over. It is over, because if you think you go 1-4, I heard everybody say 6%. If you go 1-5, it is over. So I went out and did a little bit of research. I actually tried to get these numbers. I don't have the information through 2015. So I don't know if any 1-5 teams have made the playoffs last year or the year before that. I don't think so. But from 1990 to 2013, if you start the season 1-5, no one's made the playoffs. No one has made the playoffs. 0%. If you start the season 1-5, you do not make the playoffs. Period. Full stop. Go home. Start booking your tee times in January, because you will be available. You're not playing. Now, 2-5? 3%. 3% of teams have made the playoffs starting 2-5. And I think that was the 2012 San Diego Chargers, possibly. But you do not make the playoffs if you start 1-5. Whew. So there you have it. There you have it. That's what the Carolina Panthers are looking at right now. I have them winning. I do not see them going down to 1-5. I see them getting the victory and turning their season around. Going 2-4. Now, 2-4, they raise their chance. They go from 1-4 being 6% chance to 2-4 being a 9% chance. So it'll start to look better if they start winning football games. So there you go. The Carolina Panthers are in danger of pretty much calling it quits on their season if they lose to New Orleans, which, it's a divisional game. New Orleans is playing some solid football on the offensive side of the ball. Defense, Yeah, not so much, but it's not like Carolina's been lining the scoreboard up on the offensive side of the ball. They most likely get Cam back for this one, so I'm sticking with Carolina. I think they can turn it around. Let's see. Jeremy says a huge fall from grace for Carolina, but hopefully with Cam back, they'll lead them to a win. He likes Carolina as well. I cannot disagree. The Baltimore Ravens travel to New York to face the New York Giants. This is another game that we disagree on. I've got the Ravens. I think the Ravens defense will do just enough to kind of startle Eli Manning, who's kind of reverted to his old self of stomping around in the back and throwing picks and being happy feet Eli, to beat the Giants, even though they're on the road. Jeremy says, let's see. Jeremy says, happy feet has returned, but I think home field will clinch it for New York. So he likes the Giants in this one. I like Baltimore. That's five. Count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, 5 games that we differ on. We agree on all the nap games. Here are the nap games. Cleveland at Tennessee. We both have the Titans at home. Jacksonville at Chicago. We think Jacksonville is getting ready to turn it around. We both like Jacksonville. Plus, Chicago just doesn't have a whole lot. Jeremy says, nap game, but haven't seen Jags in London. I think they could beat the Bears even in Soldier Field. I agree with Will. As far as the Tennessee-Cleveland games, he says, I think we're on 0-16 watch. I'm going to let the Cleveland Browns get the 0-8. If they get to 0-8, and then I will put them on 0-16 watch. And then finally, Jets at Arizona. Cardinals at home should have enough. I agree. I just think the Jets are not what everyone thought they were at the beginning of the season. I actually got some emails from Jets fans because I didn't have them winning many football games this year. And Jets fans were telling me that I didn't do my research, that I kind of just threw numbers out there for the Jets. I didn't really look at their schedule. People, I went through every game. Trust me, that Jets team is not as good as everybody thinks. And once and for all, somebody will finally put Ryan Fitzpatrick out to pasture, because stick a fork in him, he is done. We have got Arizona. So Tennessee, Jacksonville, Arizona, and the nap games. Jeremy, I will send you an email with the five games that we differ on. Everybody, if you're not following along on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, please do. Sometimes, you know, with fans who place their picks against me, they're in the UK with a new job schedule. It's difficult for me to communicate with them during the day. Usually, they're asleep by the time I get to record. So, fortunately, I was able to get Jeremy's picks. But he won't pick the challenge game until tomorrow. So make sure you follow along to find out which game he chose to be the challenge game. If I don't hear back from Jeremy, I will put it up, as always, to a vote for the fans through Facebook and Twitter. So make sure you're out there following. Go to www.nflrandr.com. That's nflrandr.com. And follow along to get all of those social media handles. Appreciate you listening. Before I go, I got to give props to my executive producer, Jeremy, and he wants to know, what do I think of the Colin Kaepernick move? Well, he says there's only one subject in Niner Nation right now, and he thinks it's the right move, moving to Colin Kaepernick at quarterback. He says if Kaepernick can't work in the Chip Kelly offense, then the 49ers have to go hunting for a good QB in the draft next year. I'm going to say I've been calling for Colin Kaepernick to play in the Chip Kelly offense from the very beginning. I don't think Blaine Gabbert is a starter in the National Football League, and he hasn't proven that for several years. Colin Kaepernick at least could start, and he is just as mobile, if not more mobile, than Blaine Gabbert. So Kaepernick in the Chip Kelly offense with the read offense that Chip Kelly likes to run would be better suited to a Colin Kaepernick. Now, I know everybody's been saying that, well, he's lost some weight, he went vegan and whatever. Look, the dude is still in great shape. I've seen him on the sideline. He looks pretty phenomenal. I think he's ready to go. The fact that he was willing to restructure his contract lets you know that he knows it's ready for him to put up or shut up. Okay? He's been making all kinds of headlines and all kinds of media circuses because of what he's doing off the field. But here's the thing. The San Francisco 49ers had an injury guarantee in his contract. First of all, he was under contract through 2020, okay? San Francisco 49ers needed to do something about that. Now, he was under contract, and he had injury guarantees through 2017 that were roughly worth about $14.5 million. They've reworked all of that. The contract now basically is in its essence, a two-year deal. He plays this year, he plays next year. No more injury guarantees through 2017, and the 3 years of the contract, of a six-year contract that it was previously a deal that he signed, are gone. It dissolves those last 3 years, and it gives Kaepernick the option to void the deal after this season. So he gets a little win. The 49ers get a little win. They say, okay, Chip Kelly, you can put him out on the football field. Now we don't have to worry about if he gets injured or not, and we have to pay him $14.5 million. This works for everybody. Go ahead. Good luck. Go win some games, Kaepernick. Contract is good. Now, all along, Chip Kelly was telling the San Francisco media and anybody who would listen, this is not about the money. This is not about the contract. I will start Colin Kaepernick when I'm good and ready. Well, of course, he's good and ready now because there's been a contract that's been redone. And that's great. I'm happy for the San Francisco 49ers. I'm more happy for Colin Kaepernick. Now I just don't want him to get injured because, man, that would be really bad if after he does all of this, he were to go out with an injury. Colin Kaepernick, I think, is going to do well. I think this is a bad game to come back. I think he should have held out signing the contract for one more week. Because going on into Buffalo on the road against the Bills defense that likes to get after the quarterback, he may not find success immediately. But I think in the long term, for the rest of the season, the San Francisco 49ers are going to find out that Kaepernick is the right guy for them, and they're going to start winning some games that otherwise they would not have won with Blaine Gabbert at the helm. So I think it's a good move for Kaepernick. He kind of stepped up to the plate. And he had to take a shot. Look, he had to restructure his contract. They weren't going to put him on the field. I don't care how many times Chip Kelly or anybody in the San Francisco 49er front office tells you that they were going to, you know, regardless of what his contract was, he was going to get a shot to play. Colin Kaepernick was never going to get on that football field until this contract was restructured. Now it's restructured. Now he can go out there and prove that he is still the guy who was focused and determined and took that 49er team to a Super Bowl and just inches away from winning the Super Bowl for San Francisco. Colin Kaepernick can prove that now. And at worst, what Colin Kaepernick can do is audition for the other 31 teams in the National Football League to say, look, I still got a lot left in the tank. Here's what I can do. And he can use the rest of the season to showcase himself because he was very smart to at least get into the contract. He's like, look, I'm restructuring. Give me the option to void the contract after the 2016 season. So unless the 49ers completely turn it around and go on a roll and get into the Super Bowl again, I doubt Kaepernick is with the 49ers next year because I'm pretty sure he will void that deal with the option that he has. Good move for him. Good move for the organization. I think everybody's happy. I think Kelly now can be happy that he can get Kaepernick onto the football field and get his mind right. That's what I think, Jeremy. I think you're going to have to see how Kaepernick plays out. Probably not going to be that good this week, especially since he's been sitting for the last 5 weeks. He's going to have a little bit of rust. But after he gets into the swing of things, it'll be very good for the San Francisco 49ers. In the rest of the season, second half of the season, he should be doing very well and winning some football games for San Francisco. All right, folks, that's all the time we've got. Once again, remember to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Get all the social media handles at NFLRNR.com. Before I leave, here is my lock of the week. You know what? You all might think it is a homer pick, but it is not. The Dallas Cowboys are getting 5 points, five, in Green Bay. I am sorry. The Green Bay Packers are not 5 points better than the Dallas Cowboys right now. Maybe later, but not right now. I'll take the Dallas Cowboys and those 5 points because even if Dallas loses, It's not going to be by more than 5 points. I guarantee you that. So that's my lock of the week. Take it. Last week, we hit with Minnesota minus six over the Houston Texans. So we're looking pretty good. I think you should take a try on that one. That's all the time I forgot for you. I'm Steven Miranda, and you've been listening to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm out.